Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got a dynamic hour ahead for you, the listener, and just write down these few points of information. Remember always, with the Donna Sebo Show, you want to have that pad of paper and pen handy. Our toll-free number of 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Here at on the show, because it's got the subtitle of Mind Power, we like to bring subject matter that is going to be affecting people on one level or another. And, of course, health issues are so very, very important. This morning, we're going to be talking about colorectal cancer. I have known a few people that this has affected very, very seriously. And when I was given the information about this wonderful book, The Complete Guide to Colorectal Cancer by the American Cancer Society, I felt like it was very important to take the time to share it. And we have as a guest one of the physicians that participated in the compiling of all of this information. And his name is Dr. Dorado Brooks, and he's back on the East Coast in Virginia Beach, Virginia, a very busy man. Dr. Brooks, thank you so very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for the opportunity.
This book is so comprehensive. It is just amazing to me because as I was going through it prior to being prepared for the show, I was astonished at all of the information that was compiled. How long did it take to put this particular book, The Complete Guide to Colorectal Cancer, together?
Well, what you see ahead of you, in front of you, is approximately a year and a half of steady work by a very large number of individuals.
And what was your participation in this? Like, it's on the front, you have Dr. Levin, you have just so many other people, Dr. Crane, Dr. Hoff. How did all of you come together? Why did you choose to participate in bringing all of this information into this phenomenal form of The Complete Guide to Colorectal Cancer?
Well, the American Cancer Society has recognized that colorectal cancer is an extraordinarily important cancer for a number of different reasons, and we felt that it was time to update the information that we were providing to the public. There have been many advances in colorectal cancer diagnosis and treatment in the last 10 years, and we wanted to make sure that the public had this information at their fingertips. I was one of a number of people involved with the editorial board, and we helped identify potential authors for the various chapters and then tried to make sure that we had a consistent tone across the entire volume.
Now, Katie Couric, she did the foreword in this wonderful book, and this is a very touching experience for her to share, in as much as her husband was diagnosed with this. Can you give us some information about what happened with her husband? And I know that he passed away from the condition, but Katie has really decided to be very dedicated to educating people about this. What was her story?
Well, Katie, her husband was diagnosed with colorectal cancer at actually a relatively young age. He was somewhere in his early 40s, and apparently by the time the cancer was diagnosed, it was well advanced, and therefore they were not able to halt its progress. So he died within a fairly short period of time, and Katie was very struck by the devastation that this disease wrought on her husband, her children, her family, and has made it her calling to try to change this picture. She learned a great deal about the fact that colorectal cancer is actually a preventable disease, or even if it is not prevented, if it's detected early, that the outcome can be much, much better than unfortunately was experienced by she and her family. So she's taken it on as a mission and has done more for awareness of colorectal cancer probably than any individual in the world.
Now, for those of you that may not be aware of Katie Couric, she is and was a co-anchor of the Today Show, and as Dr. Brooks mentioned, her husband died from this. Now, this book that we're talking about this morning is The Complete Guide to Colorectal Cancer. It's involved with prevention, detection, diagnosis, treatment options, complementary and alternative therapies, your healthcare team, coping with this, living with it after you've gotten past the cancer situation, caregiving, all kinds of information is in this book. Now, Dr. Brooks, I think what I would like to do is talk about the myths regarding this. What is it, and what do we need to know about it? And I know the book goes into a lot of detail, but let's just touch on some of the myths that are surrounding this particular type of cancer.
Well, there are any number of myths about colorectal cancer. One of the most prominent is who gets it and who doesn't get it. Many people believe that colorectal cancer is strictly a family affair. And so if you don't have anyone in your family who has been diagnosed with the disease, then you don't have to worry about it. And that, unfortunately, is absolutely false. The vast majority of people who are diagnosed with the disease, that is probably about two-thirds of individuals who are diagnosed, have no clearly identifiable risk factor for colorectal cancer other than being over the age of 50. So if you are 50 or older, you are at risk of getting this disease, and you need to be tested regularly to either prevent the disease or find it early. Another myth is that if colorectal cancer is found, that it's a death sentence. There's nothing that we can do. That's a blatant myth, and unfortunately, I think, keeps many people from pursuing the kinds of testing that we're talking about that have the potential to be life-saving. In actuality, if colorectal cancer is found at its very earliest stages, about 9 out of 10 people who are diagnosed will be alive 5 years later, which is a remarkable survival rate. Unfortunately, only about 40% of people are found in that very early stage. If the disease has advanced by the time it's diagnosed, if it has spread to other parts of the body, then the survival rate drops to about 1 in 10 at 5 years. So it makes a huge difference when the disease is diagnosed as to how effective we can be treating it. There is a myth, for some reason, women believe that they're not at risk for the disease and that it's a man's disease. And actually, the number of cases of colorectal cancer in men and women in the country each year is about equal, so women are definitely at risk. If you are 50 or older, male or female, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, you need to be tested for this disease.
Now, Dr. Brooks, I know personally someone that who is in her 40s, in her early 40s, and she is one of these individuals. She travels all over the world. She's in a very high stress level. She has never paid attention particularly to her diet or anything of this nature. When she found that this was what she had to go in for surgery very, very quickly. And she's gone through a lot of adjustments since then. Do you find that lifestyle has, or has it been found through research, that lifestyle has a great deal to do with people developing this?
Well, we don't have a lot of information about the role of stress in developing cancer, but there are a number of other lifestyle issues that definitely do impact one's risk. People who smoke put themselves at increased risk of developing colorectal cancer. Now, most people think of cigarettes and lung cancer, and that certainly is a very strong link, but colorectal cancer is also tied to smoking. Obesity increases one's risk of developing colorectal cancer. Diets that are high in processed meats, like lunch meats, hot dogs, et cetera, and diets that are high in red meats increase the risk of developing colorectal cancer. So those are some very basic. Oh, also alcohol to excess, anything more than one drink a day, increases the risk of this disease. So those are a number of lifestyle-related factors that can increase your risk. Now, the flip side is that you can decrease your risk by avoiding all of those things. So non-smokers have a lower likelihood of developing the disease. People who are physically active and physically fit have a decreased risk. People who eat diets that are high in fresh fruits and vegetables and low in processed meats and red meats decrease their risk. people who either abstain from alcohol or use alcohol in moderation decrease their risk. So maintaining what I perceive and what many people perceive simply as a healthy overall lifestyle helps to cut your risk of developing colorectal cancer, along with decreasing your risk of a number of other diseases, heart disease, diabetes, and other diseases.
Now, I have here in front of me the book, and, excuse me, the statement is made that more than 95% of colorectal cancers are adenocarcinomas. And can you explain to my audience what that is and the relationship with polyps, or how is this connected, if it is at all?
Yes, polyps are an extraordinarily important factor in colorectal cancer. Polyps are non-cancerous growths that occur inside the colon or the rectum, and many people develop polyps. Polyps are usually clinically silent. That is, people have no symptoms of these at all. And there are a number of different types of polyps. The polyps that we are most concerned about are called adenomas. They show certain characteristics that make them more likely to progress and turn into cancer. So most colorectal cancers seem to start with a non-cancerous growth called a polyp. And that's actually what I was referring to earlier when I talked about the disease being preventable. The screening test that we recommend for colorectal cancer can actually find polyps. So you find polyps before they turn into cancer, and if you remove those polyps, you can actually prevent cancer from occurring. Many people feel that the slight decrease that we have been seeing in the overall colorectal cancer rates in the U.S. in recent years are related to the fact that more people are having polyps found and removed, and therefore we are preventing the disease. Unfortunately, that's still a relatively small number, and many people are not undergoing the routine testing that they should be having and consequently are being diagnosed in more advanced stages.
For those of you that may have just tuned into the broadcast, we're talking with Dr. Dorado Brooks, who is very much involved in putting together this complete guide to colorectal cancer. And as I mentioned earlier, it has affected people that I have known, and I know what the process has been in a small degree that they have had to go through, and it's really changed their life. So this is information, and as you know, when you listen to the show, I always encourage you to read, to be open to learning about things, because you never know when you might be able to help someone else. So a guide like this can be very, very significant. Now, Dr. Brooks, there is so much with this that you've mentioned regarding testing. What kind of testing are you talking about?
Well, there are a number of different tests that have been shown to decrease the risk of either developing colorectal cancer or of dying from the disease. There are simple tests that your doctor can give you some cards to take home and collect stool specimens, and then you return these cards to your doctor or to a laboratory, and they look for evidence of blood. Now, many people, when you talk with them about it, will say, well, I don't see any blood in my stool, so I don't have to worry about it. Well, the blood that we're looking for are microscopic amounts, so you're not going to see blood with your naked eye in the early stages of this disease, particularly at the polyp stage. It's very unlikely you're going to see that kind of bleeding. Now, let me digress for a moment. If you see blood in your stool, that should be an immediate and significant warning sign. And if you have blood in your stool, you need to see a doctor and have it evaluated, because blood in the stool, while it is often related to other conditions, can be a sign of colorectal cancer. So anyone who's having bleeding in their stool, you want to skip right past any of these other tests that I'm talking about and go right to your doctor and have that evaluated.
Excuse me, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
For people who are not having any signs or symptoms of the disease, collecting these stool specimens and looking for evidence of hidden blood is one simple way to be tested for colorectal cancer. If people choose to have that test as the main test that they use, that needs to be repeated every year, because it will miss some abnormalities. But if you're doing the test year after year after year, there's still a strong possibility that we will detect disease in its early stages. Then there are more invasive tests. There are scopes, which which are lighted tubes that are inserted into the rectum, and they actually look around in the rectum and through the colon and look at the actual lining. If there are polyps or other abnormalities seen during that procedure, they can actually be biopsied. That is, a small piece can be taken and looked at under a microscope, or for many polyps, they can actually be removed during this procedure. There are two different kinds of scopes. One is called a flexible sigmoidoscope, and that looks only at about the lower third of the colon because it's a relatively short instrument. The other scope is one that many people have heard of, and as a matter of fact, Katie Couric actually showed a colonoscopy. She had a colonoscopy done on the air during a Today Show segment a few years ago. And the colonoscopy is a longer scope that looks through the entire length of the colon. And again, you can do biopsies or you can actually remove polyps or other growths during that procedure. So it's not only a screening test, but it can be a diagnostic and a therapeutic procedure.
What about this virtual colonoscopy? I know the techniques are advancing very quickly so that it's not so uncomfortable, because the person that administers this has to be highly trained. What is a virtual colonoscopy?
Well, a couple of things about virtual colonoscopy. One, it is a very promising technology. However, at this point, there are no major medical organizations that recommend it as a routine screening test for colorectal cancer, because there have been a number of studies that have looked at it in that particular for that particular use, and the results of those studies have been very mixed. Some of the studies have shown good results, others have shown concerning results. So right now it's not recommended by any of the major organizations as a screening test. All of that being said, it is, again, very promising technology, and what virtual colonoscopy is essentially an X-ray study that simulates the same sorts of views that a doctor has when they are doing a traditional colonoscopy. They actually look at the lining of the colon via very sophisticated X-ray images, and they can find polyps or other growths during this procedure. Now, virtual colonoscopy does hold some promise for the future as a potential screening test for colorectal cancer, but a couple of things to keep in mind. One, many people are concerned about a colonoscopy just because of the idea that there's going to be a scope put into their rectum and someone's going to be looking around, and many people are very concerned about having pain or discomfort during the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
What people often don't realize is that the vast majority of colonoscopies in the United States are done under mild sedation. So your doctor is going to give you something to help you relax, and as a matter of fact, many people sleep through the procedure. Those who are awake through the procedure will invariably say, I had little or no discomfort. The main complaint that people have about a colonoscopy actually is what is called the prep. And that is for a day or two ahead of time before the procedure. In order for the doctor to get a good look at your colon has to be clean. Therefore, you're put on a special diet, which limits the amount of solid material that you're taking in. And then also, you're usually given some fairly strong laxatives, so people spend a lot of time in the bathroom for a day or sometimes a couple of days
mm-hmm.
prior to the procedure, which many people find to be a little hampering for their lifestyle. That same preparation is required for virtual colonoscopy, because in order for the radiologist to get good X-ray images of the colon, it has to be cleaned out. So the same thing that people complain about with colonoscopy is also part of the virtual colonoscopy. And then the second thing to keep in mind is, as I mentioned, during a colonoscopy, if something is actually seen, you can either biopsy it, take a small piece of it, or sometimes remove the entire thing. During a virtual colonoscopy, your doctor is simply looking at X-ray images. So if some abnormality is seen, you're now going to have to go through a colonoscopy anyway in order to have that, whatever that shadow is, further evaluated, either biopsied or removed. So virtual colonoscopy does hold some promise, but it's not likely to replace colonoscopy.
Now, what about genetic testing? This is something that is covered in the book regarding colorectal cancer. And it's regarding a gene mutation. How does someone find out about this? Is this something that runs in families? What do they think is behind this?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the vast majority of people who develop colorectal cancer develop it solely based on being over the age of 50. However, there are a significant number of cases, probably somewhere in the 10 to 15% range, that occur because of family linkages. If you have someone in your family who's had colon or rectal cancer, you are at increased risk of developing the disease, and you may very well need to start being tested before the age of 50. And then within the large pool of family-connected colon cancers, there are a few genetically mutated cancers, some gene mutations that have been identified by researchers that very clearly increase your risk of developing the disease. And the disease is often a little different in those cases. There are a couple of conditions, one called familial adenomatous polyposis, a lot of Latin words. But basically it means that the polyps that I talked about run in families, and the polyps, as opposed to in the average population, an individual may have two or three polyps found in their colon. There are hundreds of polyps in the colons of these family members who carry this gene mutation. And then there is another gene mutation that is associated with colon cancer and a number of other cancers, including ovarian cancers and uterine cancers. So we have tests that we can do looking for those specific gene mutations. If someone has a family history that suggests, if there are two or three or four cases of colon cancer within one or two generations in a family, then the doctor and that individual should start thinking, well, maybe I have one of these gene mutations. And knowing about that is very important, because for some of the gene carriers, they may need to start being screened for colorectal cancer in their 20s as opposed to waiting until they're 50. So if you have a family history that seems to be very strong in colorectal cancer or strong in cancer in general, it's a good idea for you and your doctor to sit down and really go through your family history and see whether or not you may be a candidate for one of these genetic mutations. And if so, then you should probably get tested for that mutation so that you'll know, because it has an impact not only on your life, but your siblings and your offspring.
Yes, very much so. Now, the book Colorectal, The Complete Guide to Colorectal Cancer, it's dealing with prevention, detection. You've covered so many wonderful points of information. Let's talk a little bit about complementary and alternative therapies. This is something that is covered in the book. What are some of those areas that have been found to be helpful?
Well, now we're drifting a little far afield from my area of expertise, but some of the basic issues I've already talked about are maintaining a healthy lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
and avoiding things that we know to be cancer-producing, like alcohol, tobacco, obesity. There are also some very significant, there's very significant research on mind-body connections, and certainly the attitude that one brings into treatment can have a positive or a detrimental impact on treatment outcomes. So trying to maintain a positive, focused attitude makes a lot of difference, whether that's because those are people who are more likely to follow their treatment regimens, or how much of the true mind-body connection contributes to that is unclear. There are a number of compounds that are being studied that may ultimately help prevent colon cancer from occurring, things as simple as aspirin that have been shown to decrease the risk of colon polyps, and then other members of the aspirin family that have been shown in people with these genetic syndromes, at least, to decrease their likelihood of developing colorectal cancer. So there are a number of different possibilities in the complementary and alternative medicine family. This is actually an area that's relatively new for the Cancer Society also. We have, I think, in the past been very much like the rest of the traditional medicine field, and maybe been a little too quick to criticize things that didn't come through the standard research protocols. But over time, there's been recognition that Western medicine certainly does not hold all of the answers for most of the health problems that we deal with. And I think that there is a lot more openness in the cancer society and in the cancer world in general. The National Cancer Institute and National Institutes of Health actually are studying a number of different approaches to complementary and alternative medicine for cancer and other health problems.
There is a quote by a woman by the name of Barbara that I really appreciated. She said, you have to really participate in your own illness. You have to ask questions. You have to be active. You have to go out on the Internet and find out what are all the newest medicines, what are the clinical trials, what kind of chemotherapy, if that's something that's required, what blends of chemotherapy are better. You have to be an advocate in your own illness and not just be told what to do. And once you're sick, you have a fight to get well and not to be passive about it. That is the attitude, I think, of so many people today. And as a doctor, this is something, are you more comfortable with a patient that asks you a lot of questions? Because so many times this is a very scary situation. The word cancer just creates all kinds of fear in people's minds.
Well, I think there's nothing more important for a patient to do than to educate themselves. And there are a number of reasons for that. But the primary one is that whoever your doctor is, however caring they are, you are one of only 100 or 1,000 patients that they are trying to take care of. You are in the best position. You're your only patient. So you're in the best position to know everything possible about your illness, about how medications may be affecting you, about what your fears and concerns are. Many people, unfortunately, are still somewhat intimidated by their doctor and will go in with very significant questions and concerns, but when faced with the doctor, even when the doctor asks, is there anything else that you want to talk about, for whatever reason, they won't bring that up. But unfortunately, that often then leads to patients either not following their doctor's recommendations because they didn't understand them, or they have concerns that they didn't share, or to patients taking on additional kinds of treatment. Some forms of complementary and alternative medicine have been clearly disproven, but they're often still promoted by various environments. And unfortunately, sometimes those therapies can actually interact negatively with whatever your doctor is recommending. So for any number of reasons, patients need to educate themselves and need to talk with their doctors about any questions or concerns that they have. If you have a doctor who you don't feel comfortable talking with, then you have to question whether or not that's the person who should be treating you, because you really need to have open, honest communication with your healthcare provider.
My guest this morning has been Dr. Dorado Brooks. He is one of many individuals who helped to put together from the American Cancer Society this complete guide to colorectal cancer, and you can get it through the American Cancer Society. Doctor, give us the website quickly. We have just about 30 seconds left here. The website and the toll-free number.
www.cancer.org or 1-800-ACS-2345. There is someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, who will answer your call and your questions.
This is wonderful. That's cancer.org. That's very simple, cancer.org. The American Cancer Society. The toll-free number is 800-ACS, Adam Charles Sam 2345. Dr. Brooks, thank you very much for being my guest this morning. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I'm so glad that we've been able to put in print a lot of information that will be helpful to a lot of people.
Well, thank you, Donna, and thanks for sharing this with your listeners.
It's my pleasure. You have a magnificent day. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be going to break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't you go away. Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and we have got open telephone lines. If you would like to call in and chat with me and receive an intuitive reading, I would be delighted to do that for you. By the way, all you need to do is give me your first name or your initial. Of course, first you'd have to call this toll-free number, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Now, I want to let you know about some guests that are going to be coming up. And tomorrow we're going to be talking about what it is to be a Japanese-American. Gil Asakawa is going to be my guest. He has a wonderful, wonderful attitude, and I just love the information he shared. Next week we're going to be talking to Jerry Winstrom. We're going to be talking about the inspired heart. And then on Tuesday we'll be talking about quantum success with Bobby DePorter. We're going to go into healthy medicine. Dr. Robert Ziv, who is a person that has a real passion about changing people's understanding about medicine and how to make it work for you and how we can make a difference in what we can do for ourselves, as well as knowing how to ask the right questions. Then, Coral Montana is going to be my guest. She is in Australia. We're going to be talking with her directly. We're going to be talking about a person from history, Crazy Horse, another time, another place. Then we're going to be talking with Bill Borchert. We're going to be talking about Bill Wilson's wife. Who is Bill Wilson? Well, he's the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. His wife's story, and by the way, her name is Lois, is absolutely fascinating. So we're going to be covering a lot of unique subject matter next week. And, of course, you're invited to join us. And I'm happy to light up your life with a little bit of insight, but I also like to light up your life with perspectives from different people, from different, views, because they all have walked a walk of experience. And when they're on the show, they have their chance to share with you what they've learned and how maybe it can benefit you in a very special way. And one of the greatest gifts I think they give is the opportunity for us to even go further with it and share it with others. Which brings me to a thought here. And by the way, if you want to give me a call this morning, 877-876-5227 is the number to call in to. Teresa Hines, who was a philanthropist, I really liked her attitude. And she made this comment, and I would just like to put it into your mindset for this day. And here is how it reads. Your diligence and nurturing will protect and inspire many people in your lifetime. Acknowledge and cherish every single quality you have and use it. Leverage it to the fullest. Make room daily for your own time and space so that you are able to open your door generously to others. I think that's a wonderful statement, and it gives such a boost when you can just pay attention to your own talents and abilities. And when you're a younger individual, you may not think you have very much to offer, but you do if you look at what you really enjoy being involved with and participating with other people in. I think you're going to find yourself just amazed at how your talents are there and are being utilized every day. If you're a mature individual and you feel as if, well, you're in the golden years of your life and I guess we're supposed to be running around in an RV or whatever and eating barbecue in different cities, I don't know. People have all kinds of concepts about what different ages represent in a lifetime. But if you don't do that to yourself, if you don't compartmentalize and put yourself in a little box, my goodness, you're going to be able to experience so many wonderful adventures, first of all. And secondly, you may find things that you were not able to do when you were younger may be just absolutely perfect for you to do when you're older. Or you may just decide there are things that you did do that you don't want to do anymore and you want to move on into brand new territory. It's an adventure. So no matter what your age is, no matter who you are, in what part of the world, understand every day is a golden opportunity for you to express the finest and the best about yourself. So I wanted to share Teresa Hines' perspective because I thought it was a good one to share. Now, if I have time this morning, I'm also going to share with you a little bit in the way of a recipe, but I wanted to sort of digress about going to the moon. Ah, yes. Sorry that sounds a little strange, but, you know, we're still trying to do what we can do to get into outer space. And I think Gene Roddenberry, when he put together Star Trek, and, you know, he has this series, Andromeda, and all, Andromeda, I guess that's the correct pronunciation. You have so many different programs that have sort of been given birth because of Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry's vision. But there are so many people out there that want to explore, and And oh, I know there are those people that say, we haven't explored everything on this planet. Why bother to go to outer space? My attitude is, why not? There's always something new to learn. Well, apparently NASA is really trying to rebuild its credibility, and it's using a bit of fiberglass and Velcro. It's the material that's holding together a mock-up of the agency's upcoming manned space capsule. And I look at this, and it looks like a UFO, first class. And they're trying to put together the skeletal model. It's going to be the first hard evidence of NASA's plan to send humans back to the moon and then on to Mars. Can you imagine how exciting that would be for someone that wants to be an explorer? So those young people that are out there going to school, they need to know all of their education is going to pay off long term. Now, President Bush apparently endorsed this agenda in 2004, and the engineers have really been moving hard and fast, trying to get everything from launcher to spacesuit. And, of course, sending humans on an extended expedition to the moon will require the launch of a 1.8 million-pound rocket. And then they've got to make sure they can operate reliably in orbit, and it's going to go up unmanned. This is the first one, which makes sense. Unmanned. It's going to be up there for about 6 months, and then the lander will carry the crew to the lunar surface and back. So they've got so many wonderful points of information about this. The main rocket is being powered at this point that, as I'm aware of, it could have changed. Liquid oxygen and methane. And you know what? They are theoretically looking at the fact that they might be able to extract this from soil on the moon or Mars. I mean, they're just exploring all kinds of options. It really does sound like something out of sci-fi. Now, those astronauts that will be coming back from the moon, they're going to be protected by a heat shield that is going to be much more sophisticated than anything that has been used in the past, and they're going to be testing those shield materials, and they've just got so many options, again, that they're looking at and working with. So there's just a lot of stuff going on out there, and it's just, I think, very exciting because you never know who's going to come up with an answer that's going to enable us to benefit those of us here on Earth. I had the opportunity to go to Cape Kennedy a few years back, and from the space travel that was done so many years ago, even as far back as the 60s, it really made a big difference in technology's jumps ahead with so many materials and so many understandings, new understandings that came about this research and exploration. And then I just wanted to add on here that they are saying the greatest balancing act out in there is the universe itself. The pull of gravity from all of the galaxy nearly matches the push created by the energy embedded in empty space. Who would have thought that many years ago? The energy in empty space. And apparently some 6 billion years ago, the two reached perfect equilibrium, but energy now seems to have the upper hand, causing the expansion of the cosmos to gain speed. That is a provocative thought. This is Donna Sebo. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Give me a call at 877. This is a toll-free number, 877-876-5255. 227. And the Donna Sebo Show is on same time every morning, 11 till noon Pacific Standard Time. Of course, if you're Central or East Coast, well, you've got a few hours difference, but that's not a problem. And know here at bbsradio.com, the shows are archived also for your listening pleasure. So if you're not able to hear the show during the day, you can always at your leisure go in, tap the Donna Sebo Show on the right side of your main page for bbsradio.com. Go into the archive section and listen to your heart's content to any and all of the wonderful guests that I've had. And again, if you'd like to chat with me, 877-876-5227 is the telephone number to call. We were talking earlier with Dr. Brooks about colorectal cancer. One of the components that has been enthusiastically endorsed is exercise. Well, so many people are just incredibly busy today. The idea of going to a gym and spending an hour and a half doing the workout every day is just not something that's really exciting to a lot of people. Well, there's one one very simple remedy that can help you tremendously. Believe it or not, you can do it inside your home, or you can do it outside. What is it? Well, it's a walk, yes. And you can do it during lunch hour if you're working. You can have a treadmill inside your home where you can watch television. I know that's what I like to do. I like to get out my DVDs and watch programs or points of information. By the way, your public library is a great place to go to get some fabulous, fabulous material. And you can be there on your treadmill. You can either be walking at an easy pace or you can be charging and running. But walking is really very good for you physically. Now, you can just do so many things. If you've got pets, hey, dogs, cats, take them for a walk. I don't know how effective cats are, but I know when I'd walk my dogs, I usually had to plan on an hour because I had two Scotties. I had one Scotty that was a speed demon, and the other one was slower than molasses going uphill in a snowbank in the middle of January. So it was really quite a challenge when I took them both out at the same time. But walking does this. It increases your energy, it'll reduce your stress, and boost your productivity. So go ahead. Give yourself a break. Do this for you. You know, even if you just do it for 5 or 10 minutes at a time, they have found it adds up to the same amount of benefit as a single longer session. But take a word of advice here. This is from a lady that's walked thousands of miles. Be sure you have comfortable shoes. Man, oh man, if you're not in comfortable shoes, you will be in pain, especially if you try doing 5-mile treks or compete in any of these marathons. And sometimes it's fun to walk with your spouse or with a partner. That makes it interesting, too, because you can chat the whole time you're out there. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to a break. When we come back, I got some suggestions for a very simple sandwich that can become rather exotic when you fix it with some alterations. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227. What is one of the most popular sandwiches, especially with children? Well, it's grilled cheese. Yes, that is so easy to fix, and it is just absolutely wonderful. And most of the time, kids just like plain old American cheese. Well, we adults like to spice things up a little bit. So how about if you're in a hurry, fixing something that could be a gourmet grilled cheese? How can we do that? Very, very simple. How about taking, instead of ordinary white bread, which is something I don't think makes for a very good flavor anyway, how about trying some sourdough bread? Well, then substitute Monster cheese, and then why don't you add a couple of tablespoons of crumbled blue cheese and maybe a half of a plum tomato, and what you want to do is be sure you remove the seeds from the inside of it, because otherwise it gets too juicy. And you just maybe add a little bit of watercress in there instead of lettuce or whatever you might. Usually you don't add anything, but most grilled cheese sandwiches are pretty plain. But this is something, you just cook it 4 to 5 minutes on each side. You've got a wonderful flavor. If you want that Italian touch, well, why not use some Italian bread and use a little bit of prosciutto and maybe mozzarella for your cheese, and add some drained, sliced, roasted red peppers. And how about some Asiago cheese? And maybe some bay leaves put in there for a little bit of green. Are you salivating yet? Well, let me just throw out another way to grill your cheese. You might want to have some French bread and use fontina for your cheese, and maybe add in some sliced red grapes, and how about a little bit of fresh rosemary and a touch of pepper. That's only going to take about 5 minutes per side. And then you can have brie and apple. That would satisfy a touch of the sweetness that you might want for your afternoon lunch. And all you have to do is just add a little bit of onion, and you might want to use raisin bread. Isn't that a twist? Have some raisin bread and add brie, and then have a little bit of onion and maybe some other type of cheese, and add a quarter of an apple, slice it very thin, and maybe slather on a little bit of Dijon mustard. Get those taste buds going. And better yet, you might want to have some marbled rye bread and have some Havarti cheese, and spread each slice with 1 teaspoon of spicy brown mustard Layer it with your cheese, a little bit of tomato, some fresh dill. Mm-hmm. Well, I know it's just about lunchtime for me. I don't know about you and the rest of the country, but those are just some ideas where you can just mix and match flavors, cheeses, and really get those taste buds happy and satisfied. Plain, well, maybe for the little kids if they like it that way, but the little kid in the adult likes flavor. So those are just some tips for you that just jazzes up your cream, your grilled cheese sandwiches. Now, how about a plan for expanding your brain? You know, they've often said through the years, and apparently the percentage has been increased recently. I heard in a conversation not too long ago, 10% of our brains we use, well, I don't know about that for sure, but it might be more like 20%, according to a latest statement I heard from somebody. Well, if you want to be more alert mentally, there are some things that you can do. How about watching a game show, developing your problem-solving time, and maybe learn to do one thing with your computer. Also, fish diet has a lot to do with brain activity. Remember Hercule Poirot? He always has to have the fish for the gray cells. Yes. Well, when you're wanting to exercise your gray cells a little bit more, why don't you try driving a different route to, from work, going to the store? Do something different. Change your patterning. Also, you might want to start a new hobby. You might want to do a jigsaw or a Sudoku. Have to get that right. Sudoku puzzle. And those are something that are just loved by kids. And then you might want to rearrange some furniture in your house, memorize your shopping list, talk to somebody different. Make a point when you're out and about to talk with people. Just say hello, hi, how are you? You'll be amazed. When my husband and I were out walking the other day, we learned something about Dobermans and just stopping and talking with a gal that had a couple of beautiful, beautiful dogs. You just never know what you're going to learn. And you have the opportunity every day. And with that, when you go about your day and you say, I wonder what is going to be possible for me. One of my favorite thoughts is, what gift is going to be given to me today? That's a real good attitude to have because you'll attract to yourself something that's new, inventive, unique, and you're going to say, I've learned something new. And I can tell you, I learn something new every day because of all the material I have to review for the guests that I have on the air. But it expands your world. And I find synchronicity often comes into place. When I have material that I have reviewed, maybe interviews that I've done, somewhere very close to the time I do it, I have someone that has a need or they're curious about the very subject I may have just covered with someone else. It's amazing. So never, ever be surprised as you learn new things that there may be someone or some circumstance that will need that knowledge that you've obtained. Also, this is a trick if you can do, brush your teeth with your opposite hand. Brush your teeth with your opposite hand. It will do something different in the brain. And another exercise you can do is write with the opposite hand that you normally write with. It causes the brain to work differently. And a little bit of information for you, they're finding with stroke victims, when one side is paralyzed, when they keep the active side that's not paralyzed pinned down, they're able then to start the brain to develop what it needs to develop to start activating the use of the side that has become seemingly useless. And some people have actually gotten back full use of their limbs after a very negative experience of a stroke. Fascinating stuff. We know so little about the brain, and it's amazing what it's capable of doing. Well, we're out of time. Just about here. This is Donna Siebel. I'm so delighted that you've been able to join me today. Remember, you make a difference in this world. And every time you add something to your own personal repertoire of skill and knowledge, you're bringing something special into this world that you're going to be able to share with maybe family, maybe friends, maybe a perfect stranger. Don't forget, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is a magnificent day for you. Understand there's a gift that's going to be given that will just bring unexpected blessings into your space today. And you know what? It's going to be a surprise. Donna Siebel here. Thank you so much for being with me today. Tell your friends about the show and bbsradio.com. We're here with you every day, and it's our joy to be of service. Take care. Have a magnificent day. We'll be with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.